It's time for another great episode of the Ringside Rant with your host from the hills of West Virginia, J.D. Justin Davis. And from Rochester, New York, this is RJ.
The pandemic has had a tremendous impact on sleep, insomnia, and anxiety. If you are suffering from sleep issues like half the world is, our sponsor, Real Sleep, has developed the world's first personalized sleep solution customized right to you. Unlike prescription and other over-the-counter sleep aids, their plant-based formula works with your body to get you to sleep faster, help you sleep deeper, and cut down on sleep disturbances. I'm always up at 4 o'clock in the morning for work. This is the perfect, perfect solution for a guy like me that has to get to sleep quick and stay asleep. While sleep is solitary, you are not alone, and Real Sleep is here to help. That is why we are teaming up with Real Sleep to give you 20% off your next purchase. Go to our link in the show notes and use the code POD to see why Real Sleep is the last sleep product you'll ever need. That promo again is POD, P-O-D. It's Friday. It is 9 a.m. You know what that means. Episode 104 of the Ringside Rant is with you right here and now. I'm the man with the magical voice, RJ. He is the man with the plan. From the hills of West Virginia, the one, the only, JD Justin Davis. What's up, man?
Hey, how are you, RJ? It is a pleasure to be back on the show again and reviewing another WWE pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's a streak. It's called two.
In a row, and as they say in Major League, one more, that's a fucking winning streak.
Amen to that. So we are going to be going over and ranting about In Your House, Cold Day in Hell from May 11th, 1997. It is 24 years ago this past Tuesday from the Richmond Coliseum in Richmond, Virginia. The main event was very highly touted, probably the best, one of the best matches on the card, if not the best. But we'll get into that card a little bit later. But headlined by The Undertaker and Stone Cold for the WWF title. A lot leading into this with the Hart Foundation. So we have quite a bit of storyline going into it, which is something that we normally didn't see at this time. We get a lot of the vignettes for certain stars, but this is when the Hart Foundation was really, really on fire, in my opinion. I'm sure you probably would agree with me.
Yeah, this is when it started to take off. They just got Neidhart back 2 weeks before this pay-per-view. He came back on a Raw, and Stone Cold, the Hart Foundation went down to the ring, and Stone Cold found Bret all alone in his wheelchair up in the on top of the ramp, and then he was about to get him, and then here comes Neidhart back from, nowhere to save Bret, and then Bret ends up hitting Neidhart ends up hitting Stone Cold Steve Austin with one of Bret's crutches and knocking him off the ramp. So Neidhart had just came back, and now the Hart Foundation had really just started to go into full song.
Yeah, the Hart Foundation in general, for me anyways, was always hot for me, whether it was Bret and Owen or Bret and Anvil or all of them. And then including obviously Pillman later on. So it was always, you knew what you're going to get. So with that little bit of a backstory going into this, this was one of those pay-per-views that I like the In Your House format where the set, the stage, all that stuff. It's all the old school things that I think we sorely miss, that it's the little things. We just saw the other night on SmackDown that, oh, they're going old school. Well, no, they didn't. They just basically put it on a screen and put it on the apron. They didn't really go old school. They changed the logo. but this this time frame in 97, the wrestling business was absolutely hot. WWF was getting there, or WCW was hot. Hell, even you get even ECW was starting to get a little bit of steam as well. But we saw a lot of good stuff on this pay-per-view. You have to actually sit there and actually watch it is the thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, this pay-per-view is definitely not as bad as the one we reviewed last time with WrestleMania 12. I wouldn't say this is the best pay-per-view they've ever done.
Right.
But it's better than that one.
The one from last week, it was just a matter of it was just too much at the end.
Yeah.
And it's bad. I feel terrible. Nah, I don't feel terrible saying it. But
there's also a difference in the time frame. That was
96.
This is now May of 97. So we're over a year past that time period. And a lot of things have changed, including Bret Hart now becoming a heel, including Steve Austin now becoming a face thanks to their match at WrestleMania 13.
Mm-hmm.
And now not only is Bret a heel, but he's put together all the band back together, and they're a monster heel faction, much like the NWO was over for WCW at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Hart Foundation was kind of Vince's NWO in the moment that he needed something, and he was reaching around. He had at this time there was factions all over the place, right? You had Nation of Domination,
mm-hmm.
you had DOA mm-hmm. coming. So they went faction heavy, but the Hart Foundation was definitely their most successful. And then you got DX, you know, coming after that.
Yeah. I guess I've always said that if there wasn't a Hart Foundation, there wouldn't be a DX, because the Hart Foundation, when they kind of petered off, everybody went their own separate ways. They needed another faction, and voila, here's Triple H and Shawn and X-Pac and the Outlaws. Here's DX. And the other side of the coin, I don't think you can even look at it this way. Without the NWO, there wouldn't be DX, because I think they're trying to, at this time frame, trying to one-up each other. And obviously, NWO formed in 96. The summer of 96, DX is here in late 97. But it's interesting to look back on it now and see what transpired and the causations that it did cause, because a lot of these factions wouldn't have been as popular as they were then and even now, because you walk around, people are actually going to wrestling events, you are still seeing NWO shirts. You're still seeing DX shirts, just because they bring back the classics, and they bring back the nostalgic, because a lot of the fans now, their parents, a la like myself, were NWO fans and DX fans. So now their kids kind of see what they were watching back when they were their age.
Well, and factions in the WWE really never happened until this point. WCW had, of course, the Four Horsemen. They had the Dangerous Alliance. They had some factions, whatever those heels were, with the Shark and
Dungeon of Doom. Oh, that's Eric's favorite.
Yeah. So they had factions, but if you look really over at the WWE, they never really did it before this. And fans can, you know, tweet in and tell me I'm wrong, but I can't remember a WWE faction that ever really went on before the Hart Foundation or DX or, you know, all that.
Well, I guess you can consider, what do you consider a faction? Four people? Three people?
I guess you would consider DiBiase's faction, right? And maybe Bobby Heenan's.
Heenan's family, yeah.
Yeah, Heenan's family. But well, I wouldn't consider those factions. They were more like just people owned that. Not owned, but people that were with one manager. You know, Bobby just had a bunch of people.
Right, right. All right. So with that being said, let's go up to the ring with Mr. Rich Palladino.
Ringside Rant fans, it's the opening contest.
All right, Justin. So like we said, this pay-per-view starts off pretty hot. at this time, Hunter Hearst Helmsley is new into the business, newish in the business. He's not full blown Triple H yet. He's taking on Flash Funk, a la Too Cool Scorpio. I remember this match very poorly, watching it live back in the day. Watching it now, it wasn't that bad.
Here's what was bad about it for me at the beginning of this match. The crowd damn near went silent when Flash Funk came out.
Mm-hmm.
They were not about it. The dancing, the stupid hat, the music. It got over with no one in that stadium, it seemed like. And then his entrance took way too freaking long. Like, way too long. This is Flash Funk on a curtain jerk. You know, get your ass out to the ring. You're not getting over with this stupid shit, is the way I felt about it.
Right.
I mean, no one really gave a shit about it. Just when he came out and for that big, long intro, I'm like, why?
Well, I just think they were trying to get him over. They knew what they had, the possibility in him. And I don't think anything really materialized in the company for him, because I think everybody that knew him as Too Cold Scorpio, and they wanted to get him all these outlandish moves and all that stuff, which he still did here, but not to the extent that he did in the likes of ECW or a lot of the other
promotions.
I would have
brought him in as a heel and put him in the Nation and made him Farouk's right-hand man and like an ass beater, like a tough guy. That's what I would have done with him.
Right off the bat or later on?
Right off the bat.
Yeah, because I think at this time with the Nation, there's just so many freaking people the Nation.
Yeah.
Because
now,
we're talking.
Right now, there's especially a lot until like Crush goes and forms DOA and Savio right. Vega splits off and forms. That's another faction they had with Los Boricuas.
Yeah. Because you had Crush, you had Farouk, you had Savio Vega with Clarence Mason, D'Lo Brown, JC Ice, Wolfie D.
Yeah.
That's just way too many
damn
people. Pretty
much all of those guys, except for Farouk, were gone like in a couple weeks, right? And then it was, he brought in
Mark Henry.
Mark Henry and
Kama.
Ahmed eventually.
Yeah. But it's just, we'll get back to Triple H in Flash Funk, but for a 10-minute match, just they had a lot of good. It was a lot of good storytelling. Obviously, with China being at ringside too, played a huge factor trying to get her over, which ensued get Triple H over, or Hunter Hearst Helmsley. We'll say Triple H for the time being.
I agree. They kept shooting to her, and she was there with that stone face and those big arms crossed, and yeah.
But
and
that
they were
worked.
Selling her over the, you know, the announcers were putting her over.
But nobody else was. WCW wasn't doing that. Well, they were
not really, not with women.
Well, they had Jackie.
But Jackie wasn't in China. China was her own special thing.
Well, no. I know that, but I'm just saying, trying to compare and contrast. Yeah. But even it goes to show you too. We'll talk about the two dark matches. Yeah, the dark match for Free for All before this match was Rockabilly, which later became Billy Gunn with a freaking honky tonk man, taking on Jesse James, which would later become the Roadie a la the Road Dog, which was a freaking crappy match.
Those two would then become tag team partners pretty soon after this.
Right. And then they would go join the DX when that was forming. So to get back to the main card, this was the first time we saw Rock and Mankind in a singles match. And
Before we skip to that, I have one last comment on that last match.
I watched this Triple H match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite part was JR said, Triple H is good friends with JFK Jr. And Triple H may be on the next cover of George Magazine. I'm like, are you shitting me right now?
But the thing, you never knew though with that. Well, you kind of did at that point, but it's like, no, because I heard that too. And I'm like, I just, it's one of those things you just kind of put your hand on your head. It's like, oh, come on. Did he really just say that?
And then It's pretty soon after that, King asked JR if China wore boxers or briefs.
But they're at that. This is that time, though, man, yeah, when they're trying to, they're blurring the line, all that shit. And I don't know. I didn't like it. I even watched. Then I liked it. Now it's like, really? This is shit that I like? Are you kidding me?
I will actually give Triple H credit for in this match. And you know, I don't like to do that.
Of course.
I wrote down on my notes. Okay, match. Triple H did well. Not much to hate or love, other than that the fans gave zero fucks about Flash Funk.
And that's terrible, though, because if you go back and watch a lot of his old stuff and even the stuff after this, he was fantastic as Too Cold Scorpio. Go back. I implore you guys, after you listen to this show, go back, watch Too Cold Scorpio in ECW. He had hell of matches. But that's when the creative was saying, okay, here, go ahead, go do it.
Yeah.
And looking at it now and looking at it today, it's the same shit they did then and they're doing now. We need a bing, 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 bing. Script it out. Bullshit. Do your own crap. It's plain and simple, because that's when...
That's when you get the best shit.
Exactly. That's when...
That's good shit, pal.
We're talking about the Hart Foundation a little bit earlier in Austin.
And you
That WrestleMania 13 match... That you can't tell me that was fucking scripted.
It was put together by two guys that knew what they were doing and they were allowed to do that. But right. Not only that, but Brett was doing his own promos. Steve was doing his own promos. No one was writing those down for them at this time.
Right.
They may have had ideas of where they wanted to go, but Brett and Steve would just run with a couple bullet points.
Right. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Anyways, the second match. Yeah. Mankind and The Rock. So this is probably one of the first of their very many meetings, legendary meetings that they've had together.
This is the first one they'd had on pay-per-view. And previous to this, Rock lost the IC title in February of 97 on a Thursday edition of Raw to Owen.
Thursday, Raw Thursday. Pal.
Which I was trying to remember. Why it was, I'm pretty sure it was probably the dog show, right? That they had on.
Probably.
Because that was February, so probably, yeah. It was probably something on USA. But we'll start with Rock real quick. This is the only time when I was watching this that I ever heard The Rock kind of stutter in a promo.
Yeah, it was not a good... It was probably one of the worst Rock promos you will ever see. Go back and watch this, guys. If you're listening to this podcast, pop it in on the cock and check out Raw Season 5, May... What was it?
11th.
Or not Raw, but pay-per-view here. Cold
May 11th.
Hell. May 11th. Yeah, check that out.
Cold Day this is not Hell.
This is not a good Rock promo at all.
No, but hindsight being what it is now, you know what he's going to end up being and doing as far as a promo, being one of the best stick guys of all time, if not the best. And you could tell, he's greener than shit. And I'm thinking to myself, this whole IC run that he had, I was just starting to think that it was just too much too soon.
You know what it is? You know how the fans hated Roman Reigns? Because he was kind of shoved down their throats.
Right.
That's the exact reason why they hated Rocky Maivia at the time. It's the exact same thing.
It seems like that sort of thing happens with each generation. You had, we had Hogan in the 90s, pretty much. Then you had Rock here. Then you had Cena. Then you had, now you have Roman. Mm-hmm. But... at the same time, you're getting over regardless. You're getting a reaction regardless. And you can talk to any worker, whether they be on the main promotions or independents or retired or whatever. You get any type of reaction, it's good. Because you know they're not falling asleep. They're not sitting on their hands. They're not on their phones.
It definitely worked when they turned him heel here in a few months, so...
Well, that's when they threw him in the nation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really, I think it was two-fold or two-sided.
as far as one, putting him in the nation so he does something so he gets over. And two, you throw him in there with Farouk, Ron Simmons. Shit, man.
Yeah, but it was really the perfect thing to do with him, too, because once he got in there, you realized he's the star. And it made this perfect for them to break up, this perfect thing where, you know, Rocky was being too cocky, too. Mm-hmm. He was trying to act like the leader. And so it gave him and Farouk a crash to have and break up and then eventually, you know, go on from there. But, you know, one thing I noticed about this match was the crowd was cheering for Mankind and booing Rocky Maivia.
Yeah. Now looking at this match is Mankind and Rock match. Are you really surprised on what they became watching this as far as being the as popular and successful in the business?
No, I mean, I liked a lot of the match. There's nothing really to complain about this match. One thing I wondered, why Rocky quit doing, or why The Rock quit doing his shoulder breaker. You know, when he picks him up like a tombstone, but then he does
the shoulder breaker
on his knee and does it. He always used that as one of his patented moves, and then like he just quit using it all of a sudden.
It just might just be one of those moves where you just didn't want. He might have like injured somebody. Maybe that's the only thing I could think of where he wasn't there mentally doing it correctly. I don't even remember him doing it later in his career though. Even after,
no, I think he just kind of quit. He gave it up. You're probably right. Something could have happened or. I don't know, whatever. Maybe he just, once he went heel, he decided it wasn't like a heel type move to use or something.
Yeah. But with him in the IC title, do you think it did? Well, you think it was something that was too soon? Or do you think it was justified that to give it to him early in early 97 here?
I mean, to the fans, they felt like he didn't work. They just felt like he skipped over everybody and he didn't pay his dues, I think. Even the fans kind of felt that, which I understand, but it's not like he's the first guy. I mean, the first guy to just walk in and do that, you know.
Yeah, because he lost it two months later in April to Owen. Which I think it was rightfully so there because they were pushing the Hart Foundation at that point.
Yeah, they wanted to do that, the Four Horsemen deal where they put all the titles on, you know, the one faction, and they did.
Right. So last thing, and we'll get off this match and move on, but was, to me anyways, this was my favorite a version of Mankind. The earlier version of him where he was just that, I don't know if demonic's probably not the right word for it, but they're kind of like the snarny, demonic, raggedy,
just crazy.
Crazy.
You don't know what he's going to do. Just kind of, you know, one of those characters. But yeah, I always enjoyed Mankind. And man, what a bumper for a guy his size. You know, unbelievable.
So we then saw the debut, the pay-per-view debut of Ken Shamrock. Against Vader here, and holy crap, it's like watching two semi trucks basically collide head on watching this match. It was a no DQ. You could either, or no holds barred, excuse me. You can only win by submission or knockout. That's what they said. Going into this, I'm like, I did not remember this match previously to watching this. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, they're going to have Vader tap out, aren't they? And sure as shit, 13 minutes in, give or take, freaking taps out to the ankle, or I think it was knee bar.
I just hate that. I understand you want to get Shamrock over in a big way and you want to push him, but I just don't think Vader should ever tap out.
Well, you know, but they should do the whole
thing. It undercuts his character as a big, tough son of a bitch.
Well, they should have done the whole thing with, like they did with Brett and Austin at 13. Have them pass out from the pain. They just did. I was watching an independent show last night. That's what they did too, because the dude that was the champion was a considerable amount lighter than the challenger, and he tapped him out. quote unquote, but he passed out. So by technical knockout or technical submission, whatever you want to call it. But I just, they never did Vader just when they brought him in. No. Earlier on, they pushed him.
Sean kind of killed his push there, I think.
Exactly. When he had the matches with Sean, and because Sean didn't want to put him over.
Well, Sean didn't want to work with him, I guess.
Well, that too.
Sean, I think maybe Vader was a little rough with Sean, or did
Vader was rough with everybody.
Vader actually didn't do anything wrong from what I remember about this story, but Sean took it like way too over the edge and said, I don't want to work with him anymore. You know, kind of that deal, and just killed that whole feud.
Yeah. I just think if they would have given him the push in WWF that they did in WCW, he would have been champion 3, 4, or 5 more times, possibly easily. Cause I think he was only what, maybe like twice.
He was never champion again after he left WCW. So yeah,
no. I mean, WWF. I think
twice in WCW. Right. But,
yeah. Cause he never had big gold. He had the actual WCW championship. Yeah. But I mean, in WWF, because he only had it in WWF, he didn't have it maybe once or twice, right?
No, he didn't have it at all.
I thought he did. I could have sworn he had. Mm-mm.
They never, I mean, his push never got any better, really, after this first initial push.
I must be thinking of somebody else then.
Yeah. But you know, what I liked about this match, well, one of the things I didn't like about it, Shamrock's music was weird. This was not Shamrock's regular music.
Right, this was his first music, yeah.
Yeah, and it was definitely weird. It threw me off when I was watching a match. I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And then the funny thing was, toward the end of the match, you could hear Shamrock loudly call for kicks when Vader was, like, up against the ropes. He's like, kicks, and he starts kicking the shit out of Vader.
Yeah. Well, but you could even say, like, a couple of those kicks connected with his freaking head. You could see his head go back. And we saw that Shamrock actually ended up breaking Vader's nose in this match.
Yeah.
Thanks for our friend Devin Dowling for suggesting this question. He said, should Ken have got a little more training before switching into wrestling at this point?
Probably. But what are you going to do? They did make him a referee. They 13. Did wait a while. So I think he was getting that training. But yeah, it was definitely probably a rush training. Mm-hmm. But when you're a guy like Ken that already knows how to fight and you're athletic, I mean, I'm sure it is hard. And I'm not underselling how hard it is to fake hit someone all the time and do stuff like that. But I don't know. The answer is yes. But was the timing right to train him longer? Not really. You got to understand that this is in the middle of a war. Mm-hmm. And when you're in the middle of a ratings war and a fight for your company like Vince was, he don't have time to pussyfoot around with training Ken Shamrock. He's a name that was in MMA. He needs to get him on Raw.
Right. Well, and I think, too, didn't they send him up to the dungeon in Calgary with Stu Hart?
I believe so. He was a friend of Brett. Brett was the reason, I think, one of the main reasons that he came to the WWE.
Because just looking at it now, it's like, okay, you don't need a whole hell of a lot of training once you get out. Once you go through the Hart Fund or the Hart dungeon, you're good to go, man. And like you said, I really think that they said, okay, well, you went through the Hart dungeon, you're an MMA star. You're good to go, man. Just do what you got to do. And you're sure good. He's good shape.
I'm sure he did a lot of, you know, training probably with guys like Tom Pritchard.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure he did a lot of that and a lot of house matches and stuff like that. So this wasn't his first rodeo. So, you know, accidents happen. Vader's hurt a lot of people too. He didn't need more training.
Well, maybe he needed a little bit more training or something. Yeah. But yeah, I'm like watching his back. I'm like, oh, that was stiff. It's a little bit stiff ski in this match, but I'm pretty sure Vader was stiff with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
in yeah. general, just not in this company. But it's just unbelievable to see just Shamrock. I'm like, I've never been a big fan of Ken Shamrock, period. I still think he should have been pushed. I know he was IC title a couple times. He had that great, I think this feud that he had with Vader, this is his initial pay-per-view coming in.
He went on a feud with the Bulldog in SummerSlam, and that's when they had their
dungeon.
No, it was a dog food match. The loser had to eat a can of dog food.
It's 97. That's shit. Who booked this shit? But I just, maybe they should have just pushed him a little differently. I know they had a good feud with Rock later on for the IC title.
I think they wanted to push him a lot farther than they did. But from what JR reports, he says that, you know, he was late a lot. He wasn't real dependable. And so that kind of killed
the push.
Them putting, you know, maybe the bigger strap on him.
Yeah. Well, but that makes sense. But I think this time they're looking for the like big boys as champion. And yes, Shamrock was built. Yes, he had a lot of muscles, but he wasn't that tall of a dude. He's no taller than you or I.
Right.
And maybe that was something that he was playing his cards
and his promos. Cards against him. And his promos were terrible.
Well, he couldn't talk, period. It's like it's like watching Rocky. No, I don't care. Just shut up. Go punch somebody. So the main event here is, like we mentioned, Austin versus Taker for the heavyweight title. We saw five chairs at ringside that were reserved. They were bought, quote unquote. You can't see it on the video, obviously, because it's an audio podcast, but I did the whole quotes.
I like the whole storyline that the Hart Foundation has to buy tickets to the pay-per-view that they work for.
Exactly. It's fantastic. It's because they pay in Canadian money or something. But just the build for this match was just absolutely phenomenal. But what would you expect? Would you expect anything less for an Austin Taker match? Honestly, I wouldn't. But we were talking online, and a lot of people were talking about, oh, the Hart Foundation, how they get involved. They just hate each other. Between the Hart Foundation and Austin, after WrestleMania 13, they absolutely hated each other.
It got real personal real fast with, you know, Brett and the ambulance thing and Brett's knee getting hurt and all that stuff. And so they were going to come to try and make sure that Steve Austin did not become the WWF champion, because they wanted to make sure that they fucked him every chance they could. So this was their opportunity to do that and make sure he didn't win. But, you know, I like the whole match, the pay-per-view match, or the main event of this pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. I loved the scene at the beginning of the Hart Foundation coming down and getting their seats and then wheeling Brett in and Brett sneering at the crowd, you know, and all that stuff. That was good heel shit, pal.
Yeah. Well, with him coming down in a wheelchair, that sold it even better, because okay, is he really hurt or no? What's going on with him? And I think too is the five of them were just the most hated people at this time. Cause like you said, Austin was that face. Even Taker was, cause I even think Taker was like defined as a face or a heel at this point. I don't think he didn't have the ministry yet. He was by himself. He didn't have Paul Bearer. So it's like, okay, these two guys are okay. Well, one's a face, one's a heel or whatever. They just wanted a good match. And this was Undertaker and Austin are pretty much going to be fooding for the next year, because even going into SummerSlam 98, they had that match.
Highway to Hell.
Yeah. In Madison Square Garden. So they were feuding for a while.
Undertaker and Steve Austin always have, when they do the main event of pay-per-views, they have cool pay-per-view names. Like this one, Cold Day in Hell. That's awesome. It's like Steve Austin and Undertaker's name put together, Cold Day in Hell. Or not his name, but their whole, you know, gimmicks. Yeah. And then that one, like Highway to Hell, SummerSlam Highway to Hell. I just, I remember that. I loved it. And they always played the AC/DC Highway to Hell on the promos leading up to SummerSlam.
Because they bought it. Because you didn't have, yeah. I don't even think you had to worry about the copyright then. They were just using it.
No, they bet. I'm sure they bought it.
No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this because you see towards the end there, you get, oh, you know they're going to get involved. You know it's going to happen, but when is it going to happen?
Yeah.
And sure as shit at the end, everybody and their mother's coming in and taking out Austin. And well, it's
the best part was that Pillman comes in and just starts ringing the bell randomly.
Oh,
to,
yeah.
Like, stop the match. And then everything gets going. But speaking of cold day in hell, I liked it when King said, it'll be a cold day in hell when you shut up, JR.
But that's how well they gelled at that time. They just sold it.
I was thinking this is probably one of the beginning JR King only pay-per-views.
Yeah, because this is right around when...
Because Vince was still on pay-per-views, still at this point, but he just wasn't on this one.
No, yeah, because he was backstage at this point, right?
Well, I can't remember when he quit doing pay-per-views, but I think it was right around this time.
I think it was right around early 97 here, I think. Either that or late 96, because I'm pretty sure this was in that transition between...
And we're all thankful that he quit doing this because, honestly, when the WWE went to more realistic on-the-edge programming, mm-hmm. Vince would have been terrible to narrate that because he was such a kayfabe, gimmicky announcer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
No,
he would have been terrible on, like, 98, 99 Raw as an announcer.
He was terrible when he was actually announcing in 93.
I'm just saying even more terrible.
Yeah,
that's terrible.
Even more terrible. Good sayer of words. But yeah, the involvement of the Hart Foundation in this match made this match more manageable, a lot better than it actually was, because you know Austin wasn't as limited as he would later become in his moveset, and Undertaker only did XYZ kind of moves. So he had to tell the story, and these two are two of the best at telling that story in the ring. And then you sprinkle in the Hart Foundation to screw over Austin.
Well, you got kind of two faces. One's the champion. The other one's your most popular person in the company right now. So mm-hmm. you want to keep them both pristine. You don't want to, you know, you want to keep their heat on both of them there. So I thought, you know, bringing in Pillman to interfere and cost Austin the match and keep the Hart Foundation and the Austin heat going. And then it makes, you know, no one looks bad as far as Undertaker and Austin goes. So you move on to SummerSlam or whatever we're going to next. So.
Yeah. And this King time.
No, that was before this.
No. King of the Ring. Wasn't it in June?
Oh, was it? Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that they did it in June. But yeah. But anyways, it was this time frame. Even after Hart left, that 98 going into that era, it was pretty much until Rock came a full-time main eventer or even semi-main eventer. Until Triple H came along, it was pretty much Austin and Undertaker, basically. You sprinkle in maybe a little bit Mankind, Shawn Michaels, whatever. It was basically those guys.
Yeah, DX was big in late 97 going into 98. I mean, that's when the Tyson thing in Austin.
Right.
But yeah, 98, really 98, 99, it became The Rock, Austin, Mankind, Undertaker, Triple H show there.
But one guy that is his own man and is one hell of a man is Rich Paladino. So let's send it up to the ring to him right now.
It is now time for Rants and Raves.
All right, thanks for that, Rich. So now time for Rants and Raves this week, Justin. So we talked about Ahmed Johnson. I know there's some fans out there of Ahmed Johnson. I know there are. But he has got to be one of the worst promos of all time. I don't know why they did not put somebody with him. his whole career. I know he went in the Nation. I know he was with Farouk, but he needed somebody that could do a promo for him because he couldn't do one.
Yeah, Ahmed Johnson was a big super freak of a looking of a guy. I mean, when I was a kid, I thought, man, that guy, you know, and he was over there for a hot minute. I mean, for about 5-6 months, he was pretty over. Got the Intercontinental Championship, and then people started to see not only his in-ring limits, I think, but also his microphone limits. And yeah, you're right. It's bad. I mean, there's nothing really good to say about it.
But who would they? Who would you wanted to put with him?
Put with him? I don't know.
There wasn't really anybody there, unless they put, like I said, you put him in
Jim Cornette. If you make him a heel,
well, he's not really he's not really doing anything as a face. So why not? But it's just like, he has talent. I'm not going to discredit his talent, like athletic ability, but the dude couldn't talk on the stick, man. I don't know if Cornette would be the right fit.
I don't think it is really.
But this point, what do you have to lose?
They are kind of both Southern boys, I guess, so maybe they could turn it into that type of gimmick.
Yeah, but then you're starting to blur the line
the
even
Pearl
more.
River plunge, and the right. and the Louisville lip.
There you go. Sell it. But yeah, I just never got it. I even later on in his WCW career, he just Big T Ice T something. I don't know.
But you know. The bottom line with him is I don't think he really wanted it real bad. And in the end, people that don't want it don't get over.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't doubt that for one hot second there. But we saw the main event with Undertaker and Austin. This has been one of those things that we really has been talked about since day one, since he's come into the company. Undertaker, it's got to be the best gimmick of all time, right?
It absolutely is. It's not even a question. It's not even worth discussion. And really, if you could make a top five of just Undertaker, be like, Undertaker owns all of his gimmicks, whether it's American Badass, the beginning Undertaker, the middle Undertaker, the Undertaker after that, we'll give best gimmicks of all time the top five all to the Undertaker. I don't know who number six is.
But yeah, but did he have that many incarnations of The Undertaker?
I don't know. I'm just making it up. I'm just saying.
But no, I get what you're saying, though. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's that when you're thinking about, you're picking out things out of the old box of gimmicks there. And he's going to pull out the big ass Mark Callis or whatever was picking out The Undertaker.
I forgot somebody that is maybe in the discussion, the Red Rooster. Red Rooster is right there near the top.
You better be ribbing me, you son of a bitch. That's absolutely disgusting. You disgust me. But hey, what do I wouldn't expect anything less from hillbilly land there in West Virginia.
Really, this is an offbeat story. We haven't had one yet, so we're gonna do it right here.
Oh Jesus.
I umpired a baseball game today. I was behind the plate umpiring. I turn around. This is a high school varsity baseball game. I turn around and there is a dad in the stands that's holding a rooster in his lap. Now,
like,
I know you
like,
make,
wait, like live?
A live cock was on his lap. And I turned around. I know that I live in West Virginia, but do we really need to be bringing roosters to the high school baseball game? Is that a thing?
Apparently in West Virginia, it is.
Now, I was umpiring in Ohio, but still.
Close enough. You go down Kentucky, you'd probably be getting like having somebody bring their pig or something.
I mean, the kid's dad was literally sitting in the stands with his cock in his hand.
Well, this is
that
not.
That should be a country song. Sitting in the stands with my cock in my hand, and I don't know. I've almost wrote that whole thing right there.
And I'm drinking Alvin Williams. Alvin, there you go. Alvin, not Evan.
Alvin and Theodore.
Jesus Christ. Well, you can always rely on JD to take this show to that level where you really can't come back from. Man, thanks to you now, I'm going to be thinking about that damn song the rest of the night and probably tomorrow, probably to Monday till work. Son of a bitch. He's sitting in the stand with the cock in his hand. Jesus Christ. That'll be the new theme song to the show.
Yeah, I'll write it. And we'll get some production behind it. It'll be awesome.
I'm sure we could get some of our friends from other podcasts to do some production on that. But anyway, so wrestling, there hasn't really been a gimmick, but outside the guy that came close, I will say, is Brian Clark with Adam Bomb. I really think that they had something I'm dead serious. I think at that time, if done the right way,
but you really had.
But he was the worst. He could have gotten it over. He really could.
I kind of get it, but I don't know. Adam Bomb. That's funny you said that. It's funny to me that you would say that because it just, I don't know. I never thought about that. But
I always enjoyed it. Enjoyed that character because growing up, I always wore rec specs. Remember those old, like Chris Sable from the Cincinnati Reds kind of thing? I wore those for baseball because I, obviously you can tell, wear glasses. I wore glasses then. I didn't wear contacts then. Yeah. So I wore those.
He couldn't catch the ball, so he had to protect his eyes. So he had to wear goggles that wouldn't break.
Well, that too. But I always wanted those damn goggles, man. And from talking or hearing him on podcasts, other podcasts, those damn things were prescription. You didn't know. Did you know that?
Yeah.
You did? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, there goes that. But anyways, I'm thinking of that damn song again. God damn it.
You know, I'm a Reds fan. I know my Chris Sabo history.
Yeah. but no, yeah, seriously though, that's probably the closest one that really came anywhere close. But I don't even think, would you consider Earthquake a gimmick?
I liked it, that gimmick. Kind of. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's a gimmick. Yeah, it is. I don't know. I don't know what you define as a gimmick. Like the Macho Man and that whole thing is a gimmick, right?
He's not really a king.
I mean, he's not really that person when he walks down the street. I mean, the Macho Man persona. Like,
well,
he kind of is, but I mean, but he, you know what I mean? Not to that extent.
Well, the Ultimate Warrior wasn't a real warrior. Oh, wait, he was.
The Ultimate Warrior is a gimmick.
No.
So I don't know. There's a lot of them out there, but definitely to me, I think we're talking about, when we're talking about gimmicks, we're talking about like crazy over the top shit that you wouldn't walk down the street wearing. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So the Undertaker definitely qualifies into that. But he's definitely number one and always will be. There's no.
What about Kane?
Kane is a good gimmick too, but I consider Kane the Undertaker gimmick was so good that Kane was a sprout that came off.
It was like the spawn of the Undertaker. So you go tweet at him at was it Kane WWE or something like that, or Glenn, the old mayor. But yeah, that was just something that you kind of think about when you're watching these pay-per-views is, man, that Undertaker, what if somebody else would have been the Undertaker? What if with Kane, like Glenn Jacobs was the Undertaker? What if Brian Clark or Crush was the Undertaker? Because it very well could have been. They're both all big dudes. But I just think the Undertaker was made for Mark Calloway.
Mm-hmm. And Paul Bearer was just the perfect person to put with him.
Well, but that's. But did you really think, more so later on? Initially, yes, I'll agree. But do you really think that Paul Bearer was needed later on, though?
No, that's why they got rid of him, like in 96, 5, 6.
Well, and he came back with Kane, right?
Yeah, he was with Kane. He was against The Undertaker in all through 96. Like, he had Mankind, Invader, I think, at one time, and they were all against The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started saying, "Oh, yes, Taker, I have a secret, and I'm going to tell the world." And that's when, you know, he was going to reveal that he fucked Undertaker's mom.
In the funeral parlor.
I fucked her in the funeral parlor.
If that your song there doesn't rock me to sleep tonight, and that voice sure as shit will.
But yeah, Undertaker, definitely best gimmick of all time, as our good friend Noah Anthony Schiavone would say, without question.
I'll say amen to that. So let's take a brief break, and we'll come back with a debuting segment that we will talk about when we come back. And we're back. I am with the cocky one himself, JD. JD, welcome back. The cock of the walk. There you go. That's not gonna go away anytime soon. So we chat a little bit, and we'll get a little bit of context to this next segment, revisionist booking. So podcast I did a while ago with Michael Berry Sr., that we basically rebooked a whole pay-per-view. However, I always liked the concept. I know some individuals like the concept, but I just thought that it just got old real quick, because you just do one after another, it got old real quick. With this, every event, every pay-per-view, every wrestler, every whatever we're talking about, we'll find some way to revise and rebook something from that person, that pay-per-view. And we did that with this pay-per-view here, the In Your House Cold Day in Hell pay-per-view. So the first match that I am going to rebook for the pay-per-view. Keep in mind that the only thing that you can rebook for this pay-per-view is one of two ways: if they are on the card, or if they are seen at this pay-per-view. So one of those two things happen, they're fair game. If they're not there, they're not on the card, they're not at the pay-per-view or seen on camera, you can't use them. So with that being said, I am going to basically take out the Nation of Domination Ahmed Johnson bullshit thing that they had. Get rid of that. And in place of that, I am going to put the Nation of Domination Farouk and Savio Vega in a match against the Legion of Doom, Road Warrior Animal, Road Warrior Hawk. It was just a crime that LOD was not on the main card as well as the Hart Foundation. I get why the Hart Foundation wasn't on the card. We talked about this before we started recording, Justin, but I have no idea why they were not on. Later on, I got it because they were in the stands. They had to play that up. But these guys should have been on the main card, at least LOD anyways. And this is that way of getting them on the card. And this match alone, you want to talk about, we talked about Vader being stiff. Holy shit. LOD and Nation Domination, they'll be stiff as shit. Between, especially LOD and Ron Simmons. Holy Christ, man. And you throw Savio Vega in there, that's a younger Savio Vega, that is. And you still have the outside run-ins potentially from Crush or whomever, or D'Lo. And this could be your number one contenders match for the tag titles against Owen and Bulldog on Raw. And I just, my thing has always been, on a pay-per-view, every title should be on the line, regardless. Or have some sort of number one contenders match for a specific title or have some storyline behind the match.
I agree. I mean, when we looked at WrestleMania 12 a couple weeks ago, you know, the reason why I didn't really like that pay-per-view is because there was only one title match and that was the world title. There was no Intercontinental. There was no tag team. And I just think you need stakes to make matches mean something sometimes. Not everyone, but if it doesn't have any title stakes or anything like that, you need to build a really good story stake around it. But I don't know. I agree. They should, you know, there needs to be more title matches in some of these. But the problem was all the titles were on the Hart Foundation at this time.
Well, but there's always so much that you can do with that. Well, no, and there's always so much that you can do with that, though. That's the problem. And I just
wonder, though, if you're like, I don't remember buying this pay-per-view. Me and my friends got a lot of them. Mm-hmm. We were mostly on WCW pay-per-views at the time, I think. But we watched the big, but I don't think we got this one. And there's probably a reason for that. There's no freaking title up for grabs in this whole pay-per-view.
Well, outside the heavyweight title, no. Because,
yeah, outside the heavyweight title, yeah.
Because I think, like you said, the Hart Foundation had every title. Obviously, outside the heavyweight title that Undertaker had, but
and they would soon get that in a couple months.
Right, but it's just when you look, and even at 97, LOD wasn't LOD of 1987 or 1990 for that matter. They weren't the same team, but they still could go. They still could get that draw for people getting into the stands, buying a ticket to come watch it, or buy it on pay-per-view. And at that time, this shit wasn't doing crap. Mm-hmm.
I want to go ahead and correct something we said earlier in the show. I'm going to go ahead and edit ourselves. Uh-oh. I know earlier we were talking about the next pay-per-view, and we said it was King of the Ring.
Yeah,
I just realized they did away with King of the Ring this year. It was Canadian Stampede was the next pay-per-view.
That was the next In Your House one.
Yeah.
That's
June, right?
Yeah, because that would have been the Hart Foundation versus what was it? It was Austin,
Stone
Gold,
Cold,
Gold Dust,
Vader,
and I think there was
Legion of Doom.
Was it Legion of Doom? Yeah.
Because
they are feuding. Because they are feuding with Owen and Bulldog.
Or was it Austin? Was Vader in it, or was it Ken Shamrock? I don't remember.
No, I think it was Vader. I'm pretty sure it was Vader.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, and that was like their best, hottest live crowd at a pay-per-view maybe ever. And that was just, I think, the next pay-per-view, right?
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, though, when you have guys that...
I think that just shows you how hot the Hart Foundation was getting, not only over his heels here,
right,
but
their
faces
in Canada.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. When you have... Normally, you would get cheered. If you're a Canadian wrestler, you'd get cheered normally, regardless if you're in Canada. Because the Canadian wrestling fans are synonymous for cheering their own, regardless that they're a face or a heel, you're going to get cheered for the most part. And then it's just the storylines going into this were just, they were there and they just weren't anywhere going forward. They weren't anywhere else. But like I said, that's a way of getting some sort of the names onto the main card and being LOD and Nation Domination. What's that?
Go ahead. My rebooking. I was going to probably take the Rocky Maivia Mankind match. It's not that there's anything wrong with it, but obviously there was no feud there. There's no build up. And Mankind goes over, which is fine. But the crowd, it was just weird. The crowd really hated Rocky Maivia and loved Mankind. I don't know if that's what you really want with your baby face and heel in a match. So I feel like if you flip that and you put Owen in there against The Rock for the Intercontinental title, you'll get that heat on Owen because the fans hate the Hart Foundation. But I would go ahead and put Owen defending the Intercontinental title against The Rock, where he had just won it from, I think a few weeks before Thursday Raw Thursday, like we said.
Mm-hmm.
And then you still had a little bit of a story there with those two. So you could just go ahead and then just have a schmoz finish, maybe have Neidhart come in and do something stupid or whatever. But I love Neidhart at this time. I was telling you, I watched the Raw leading up to this pay-per-view. And Neidhart was just the character, him and Pillman back there. Like when I watched the Raw right before the go home Raw before this pay-per-view. At the beginning of it, the Hart Foundation came out and wheeled Brett down, and Brett was in the middle of the ring giving this big promo about how terrible America is and everything. And then he talked about all of his brothers and talked about each one. And he finished with Neidhart. He said, "You know, my good buddy, my best friend who's been there since the beginning, you know, Jim Neidhart, my lovable buddy." And the whole time Brett was talking about him, Jim was just looking at him like all concerned, tapping him on the arm, just like being that, you know, "What do you need? I'm here for you, Brett."
Mm-hmm.
And then, but also when Brett was talking, he was also going, "Yeah, what he said," and then doing his laugh and everything. He's just a character. Neidhart is a character. He's not Ricky Steamboat in the ring. I'll give you that, but he is a character.
He's like a bull in a china shop in the ring.
Well, the old Rhino, Vince, you got any room for a Rhino?
It's a good one. It's like I've never heard that one before.
Yeah.
But yeah, but the thing is, though, if you get these guys on the card, being Owen, Bulldog, the Hart Foundation on the card, would you have still had him come out and sit ringside, or would you have him do like a run-in or something to screw over Austin? If it was rebooked this way that we're doing it.
You can do it either way. It just gives, it's just a different way to have a spectacle at the end, having the fans kind of watch them, see what they're doing, that, you know, them standing up. And when like Austin and Undertaker went outside and Neidhart and everyone kind of standing up, and just gives a little more pizzazz, I think, to that match. Because here's the thing, you don't want either one of them losing clean.
Right.
And you know you're going to have a run in. Does it make sense just to have Owen come out and hit someone with a chair? No.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of gave a more of a slow drama build. Then Pillman goes and rings the bell. Now we got a schmoz, and I don't know. I didn't mind it. I thought it was a good little finish to it.
Well, but even if they did, let's say they do stay, they don't go ringside, they still have the matches on the card to make it actually a decent pay-per-view, first and foremost. I would have even just had them each come out at a certain designated time frame. Keep Brett up on the top of the stage or something, have somebody reel him out as when they come out, and have him watch the match from the stage, but have Owen come out and hit somebody with a chair, have Pillman come out, ring the bell, or have him sneak up to ringside from the backstage or something, ring the bell, have Neidhart come out and just keep on time and time again, screwing over Austin or screwing over Undertaker. So the match gets thrown out or something. And because one thing I've learned in the wrestling business, you have to expect the unexpected, or don't expect the unexpected, whatever the case may be, however it's termed.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I've learned in the wrestling business too, is that no matter what finish they would have picked out for that match, we would still be sitting here today saying, they could have done that differently.
Well, but that's, you know? but that's what gives us, yeah, the material to do this show, or to watch this or watch that, or
well,
whatever.
I know. I'm just saying, I don't think you always have to pick on everything. I didn't mind the finish of this. Like I said, you want to leave both these characters pristine. You don't want them losing. You know, the Hart Foundation, you're trying to build your Hart Foundation, Austin Heat, you know, into the summer. And so it's a logical ending. It's really the only ending you could really probably have, you know, so it is what it is. This pay-per-view obviously was not thought about by the WWE to be a big deal, because they didn't treat it as such. They didn't put their big stars really on this thing other than Undertaker and Austin. So I don't know that they really gave a shit. It was probably just a get over to get me over to get over. You know what I mean? Just one of those type deals. But even to get a lot to your next pay-per-view, which would have been, I guess,
Calgary Stampede.
Canadian Stampede.
Or Canadian Stampede, yeah. But yeah, but you said all these stars, aren't it? But the thing is, like we said previous to this, the only stars that you really had, legitimate main eventers, were Austin and Taker and Brett. Brett was hurt.
Yeah.
Michaels wasn't there. Triple H wasn't what Triple H is.
Brett really was hurt at this time.
He had
a serious, not serious, but it was.
His knee injury, right?
Yeah, he had a knee injury.
Yeah. But Rock wasn't what The Rock was. Mankind wasn't that. Austin or Triple H wasn't that. Kane wasn't here yet. So, like we said, it was pretty much a two-horse race at this time as far as legitimacy in the main event.
Undertaker, really what you had here was Shawn, Undertaker, Austin, Brett.
And it would all interchange. And then you had Vader. You could throw Vader in there anytime you really wanted to, technically.
Psycho Sid was gone now, right? He was gone after WrestleMania 13, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. And he went down south, right?
I think he went to play softball.
Yeah, it wasn't so well.
I heard the softball's good in Florida or Georgia there.
In May, it's good everywhere, though. Softball's good anywhere this time. As long as you don't bring the rooster to the game, that's how it matters.
They come to get the rooster. Oh yeah.
Yeah. No. Normally, I'd say, hey, let's put Austin and Taker as the title of the show. But I might say, hey, I can't do it. I'm like, oh, the guy over there with his cock in his hand.
Yeah.
Just put that as a title. That won't get too many bad reviews or whatever. I already have enough bad reviews anyways, but they say
a cock in the hand is worth two in the bush.
Sure.
Is that how that goes?
I think you could consider it that if you put it in writing.
All right. I
know a couple of attorneys. We can get that notarized and stamped.
Stephen P. New. He's right here in West Virginia with me. Stephen P. News right here. Me and him, we met at a Marshall football game here in Huntington. I'm going to call up Stephen P. New. We're going to take care of that.
Yeah, just get that. Hey, we know a gimmick attorney too. What the hell?
That's right. I got two.
I'll DM the good doc and see if he could do kind of push that forward a little bit.
I need a patent on that. A cock in the hand is worth two in the bush.
That's legitimately going to be the title of the show. That will be. I'm like, I don't care if I'll get heat for it. It's funny as shit. But hey, it'll make people watch it. I'm like, oh well, what the hell are they talking about?
Well, I feel like we should end this show before we find some other cock talk.
Yeah, we get buried too much. We start digging ourselves deeper into the hole. Oh wait, I just made another joke. Anyways, so we appreciate you tuning in this week. For all their rambling and ranting and what have you. But hey, what other show will you expect ranting other than Ringside Rant? So appreciate everybody listening. Obviously last week with JD being JD's first episode, got a lot of good responses. Our boy Michael sent out a great tweet today. A lot of DMs coming in saying, hey, you guys are doing great. Got a really good chemistry. It seems like, you've known each other for a while. I said, well, yeah, we've been friends for a couple of years and we just figured, hey, you know what? We'll just, the stars aligned, the moon's out, whatever you want to call it, and bring you in from the bullpen.
The old lefty out of the bullpen.
Yeah. Wild thing. Just a bit outside. So appreciate everybody listening. Go over, subscribe wherever you get your great podcasts. We're also on the Full Press Radio Network as well as the Shining Wizards Network, wherever you get your great podcast as well as that. Check out the merchandise store over at ringsiderant.whatforapparel.com. Hoodies, regular long sleeves, t-shirts, tank tops, whatever you want. We're trying to get the logo out there, get the name out there. As you can see behind me, Justin, right here, I got a shirt that I had made for my background. And but yeah, make sure you follow us on across Twitter and Instagram at @_ringsiderant. You can follow Justin at
JD2040.
There you go, folks. Appreciate you tuning in this week. Check out the episode, the interview that I conducted with Mrs. Lori Bischoff. It came out on Sunday, this past Sunday, on Mother's Day. And just great, great sit down to talk with her. I know you've met Lori, right?
I have never met Lori.
Oh, I thought you did.
I've met her husband.
Okay.
But I've not met her. So yeah, that was awesome. I can't wait to listen to it.
Yeah. So yeah, so that as we're recording, that comes out tomorrow. But as you're listening to this, it came out on Sunday. So it's a magic of editing.
It's magic.
What kind? Isn't that a Cialis commercial?
Probably. JR says the Blue Chew is magic, so you know.
Cialis could be that way too.
Yeah.
Man, this show kind of went off the rails. I like that way though.
Yeah. Kind of
takes
we do it.
Kind of takes the nervousness or whatever the hell off of it, or whatever the hell you want to call it. But like I said, appreciate everybody listening to this week's episode and going forward. Tell your friends, tell your family each and every week, 9 a.m. You know where to be, right here on the Ringside Rant in Ranters Nation.